I can't let anyone else die because of me.
No one else is going to die because of me.
Hello! Welcome to episode 58 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a movie review podcast where we talk about movies, movies, movies! So you might have noticed that Perry Nemiroff is not here this week, but I, Christy Puchko, and my good co-host Angie Han...
Hi!
...are here to review Insurgent. But before we get to our big review and our game for the week, we're going to cut to Perry at South by Southwest, who's going to tell you all the incredibly cool things she saw there. Take it away, Perry!
Hey guys, just got back from South by Southwest, so I haven't had the chance to see the big new movie of the week, Insurgent, but I did see loads of stuff down in Austin that I'm dying to tell you about. First, my favorite two movies of the entire festival, which were Night Owls and The Final Girls. Night Owls is a romantic comedy slash drama that stars Adam Pally and Rosa Salazar. They play two people that are just complete opposites, but they wind up having a one-night stand together, and after they sleep together, she overdoses, and then it's up to him to keep her awake through the night to make sure that she makes it through the overdose alive. And over the course of the night, there's some slapstick comedy, they're poking fun at each other, and it's all related to how different they are from each other, but at the same time, they have these really great heart-to-heart conversations as well. So it's a really fun, fresh experience, but at the same time, it has like this deeper quality that gives you something to think about after, and I really just had a blast with that one. Then there's also The Final Girls, and when you hear the plot of this, you're going to know why I love it so much. So it stars Thaisa Farmiga as a girl named Max, and her mother, well, her late mother, she died in a car crash. Her mother was famous because she starred in an 80s slasher flick called Camp Bloodbath, and during a screening of Camp Bloodbath, Max and her friends are forced to step through the screen of the movie, and when they come to on the other side, they realize that they're actually in the movie. They're in Camp Bloodbath, and they need to work alongside the characters from the movie in order to survive, and they've got this Jason-like slasher who's named Billy in the movie coming after them, and it is just such a fun, fresh, clever idea, and if you're like me and you love slasher movies, there is no way you won't have tons of fun with that concept. And it's also worth pointing out that it's probably one of the most well-shot movies I saw in the entire festival. I mean, the colors are just incredible, the way that they play with horror movie tropes, but also bring a fresh spin to it and make some just like beautiful imagery is really spectacular, and I loved it. So now I want to move on to just two highlights from the Midnight lineup. And they're probably some of the more fun items on the Midnight lineup. They were Deathgasm and Turbo Kid. And Deathgasm, I was surprised that I even liked it because I'm not into heavy metal at all, but this movie is just such a blast. It has a fun Goonies-like vibe to it with the group of main characters, but it's basically about these kids who play heavy metal music, and they're able to conjure a demon apocalypse, and then it's about them surviving and helping defeat what they created. It's just insane fun. It is the goriest thing I think I've seen in the entire festival, but it's just a blast. It's really violent, but its heart is kind of in the right place, so it's impossible not to have fun with a movie like that. And really, actually, the same goes for Turbo Kid. Again, another insanely violent movie, but it's the main character in it is a young kid who's grown up in a post-apocalyptic environment, and he's lived on his own, and now he's kind of going up against an evil villain in the area in order to save this girl that he falls for. And it's heart's in the right place. It's got a fun vibe to it. And the gore in this one, too, is kind of over the top in the best ways imaginable. Both films are just so much fun. And they were perfect for that draft house environment where people are drinking and watching a movie together and, you know, cheering at the violence, cheering when the characters do something good. Both of those movies were just great communal experiences, and I loved them both. Now for two that weren't in the Midnight lineup, but that I liked, and, you know, surprise, surprise, they both have horror vibes to them. Ava's Possession I loved because as many horror movies as I've seen, I couldn't believe that I've never stopped to wonder what life could be like for a person post-exorcism. Like, a person who is possessed and then has the demon taken out, like, what happens to them thereafter? And that's what this movie does, and it does it in a really fun way. It has a little bit of a comedic sense to it, and these bright bold colors and all the shots that are really unique and fun. And there's this organization called Spirits Possessions Anonymous, which is basically like AA but for people that are possessed, and really great world building there. And honestly, I would like to see more SPA cases in like a TV format or something. It's a world that I enjoyed existing in, and I enjoyed finding all these fun details about, so I'm a big fan of that one. And then the other one is one called Nina Forever, which is about trying to think about how to explain this without spoiling anything, but it's about a guy who has a girlfriend who dies, and then he meets this other girl, but then when he brings that other girl home to sleep with her, his other girlfriend comes back in a way, like comes back through the bed while they're having sex, and it's just incredible. It's insane, it's fun, and it's got a really dark touch to it also. A really nice blend of genres in that one as well. But I think that's all I have time to talk about, but there are so many other movies well worth discovering, and if you want to know some of the studio films I saw while I was there, I think of the bunch, Trainwreck, Furious 7, and Spy were the best. Not really into Get Hard, but we'll talk about that in a future episode, but South by Southwest was yet another blast, and I can't wait for next year. So, see you guys next week!
And we're back! So, Angie and I are going to dig into Insurgent. Angie, you want to tell us what that movie is about?
Well, technically, Christy, it's called the Divergent series, colon, Insurgent. Just getting that out of the way so we can be professionals.
No, you're right. It's good that we make that terrible title clear because, like, Precious, the Book of Push by Sapphire with starring Lee Daniels and...
Yeah. Anyway, so getting to the synopsis. Beatrice Pryor must confront her inner demons and continue her fight against a powerful alliance which threatens to tear her society apart with help from others on her side. Could describe literally any dystopian Y movie I've ever seen, and actually, come to think of it, lots of movies that aren't even dystopian Ys. Basically, that's just the most generic description plot synopsis ever, but that seems appropriate because this is a very, very generic movie. To say I hated it will make it sound like I felt more passionately about this movie than I did. This movie just has nothing to it. It's just 2 hours of wasted time. If you've seen any of these movies and you've seen all of these things before, all the characters are very, like, one note and kind of just, like, stock, grim, heroic types. The one exception is Miles Teller, who is supposed to be, like, this asshole character that... the other main characters don't like that much, so I guess you're not supposed to like him either, but he gets the only lines with any snark in them, and it's Miles Teller. He's so good at playing snarky assholes, so he runs away with the movie. Sadly, he's only in it for maybe, like, I don't know, 15 minutes of screen time total.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's everybody in this movie is so, like, I'm disappointed that the filmmakers thought that taking the book seriously and the genre seriously meant just being serious the entire time. Like, everybody, it seems like in this dystopian world, part of the plague of this society is just stone face, where everybody just looks like this the whole movie.
Sometimes, like, they furrow their brows to indicate they're really serious.
Drama. But, like, Triss is just such a dull protagonist.
I love how you're about to say Katniss, by the way.
But, like, Katniss, okay, so to compare this and Mockingjay, both of them are going through similar things. Both of them have accidentally started a rebellion that is completely changing the way their worlds operate and inciting rebellion and insurgency and all that kind of stuff. Both of them are reeling from the deaths of people they really care about and don't know how to handle. But where Katniss, we get to see, like, the warmth of her and the desire for her to want to do something greater, and even moments of humor and vulnerability, all we see with Triss is her being pissed off and angry at herself and at Janine, the woman played by Kate Winslet, which also just, I don't know, just having a villain named Janine is so uninteresting on its own. Like, she's like, I want to kill Janine. And I was like, it just sounds like a weird office banter where, like, guys, I'm totally going to kill Janine if she keeps leaving her things in the copier. I can't handle it. It just doesn't make any sense. And then, like, the movie starts off with Triss embedded with the Amity people, which are basically, like, the Grateful Dead lovers of this world. They're just hippies and they're dippy and they love vegetarian food. And they give her food and she's such a bitch about it. Like, it's just so hard to get on her side. You're like, look, I know you've been through it, but there's no reason to be rude to all these people. Like, shine it on, smile politely, and sit down and eat your corn. It's going to be fine. But, like, yeah, it was just hard for me to get on her side. And then the whole movie is just so bland looking. Like, it's all painted in these grays. And whether we're in her actual dreams or in a simulation or in these futuristic dystopian worlds, they don't take advantage to make it look interesting. It really just looks like they watched a bunch of other YA movies and were like, we're just going to aim right for the middle ground in this.
Yeah, and I mean, God, it borrows from so many other movies. And look, like, to an extent, you could say the same thing about, like, The Hunger Games. Oh, it's like a lot of other movies, but at least it tries to do something new with them. This one just feels like you put, like, The Hunger Games and The Maze Runner and, like, Twilight and Harry Potter in a blender and was like, yeah, that seems fine. Like the whole, like she's the chosen one thing, and this movie takes it so far where they're like, oh my God, we need the most specialist special person of all. I'm so shocked it's the protagonist. And you're just like...
And they literally keep saying that. Like, Janine's like, I'm so surprised it's you. I was like, are you? Really? Because, like, she's what started the entire goddamn plot of this movie. So why are we surprised? Like, it's just... Ugh. And, like, the simulations themselves are wildly uninteresting this time. Like, there's one... where Trish has to rescue her mother that was kind of interesting, but then it goes on for a really long time, and I was like, this is getting tedious. And also the fact that you know it's just a simulation makes, like, lessens the drama a bit. And then take it to another level. In the first movie where she sits in a chair, and then they full body throw you into the world of the simulation, in this, they suspend her from wires, so she looks like some sort of weird puppet. And she's, like, floating and miming, jumping over walls and stuff, and they keep cutting back to her, and I'm like, this looks so ridiculous. Like, it kept taking me out of her drama to just be like, she looks like an like a zero-gravity mime.
Yeah, I mean, the simulations, I feel like there's a way that you could have them have emotional weight, you know, because there are lots of movies we watch where characters are just kind of thinking things or imagining things, but it's really significant. It doesn't work in this movie because you don't give a shit about her or any of the people in her simulations. There's just no attempt made to make it emotionally resonant.
And there's one scene that could have been really interesting where she is given a truth serum and she's afraid to take it because she's afraid it's going to make her say something that... A shameful secret she has, which if you've seen the first movie, you know what it is. I guess I'm just going to say it. Screw it. You know what it is. She killed that guy that she was friends with, Will. And she's afraid that she's going to let this out. And this could have been a really interesting moment. But instead, they basically shoot her with a serum and then she stands like this and she just keeps going like, I don't want to say it. And it's shot in a wide, which just makes it all the more ridiculous because it's just a girl standing in front of a bunch of people crying and confessing stuff. Like, reality TV knows how to make talking head interviews more interesting and more dramatic. And, like, you know, you're in this dystopian world where people can, like, create simulations and all this stuff. Why not have done that and given her a really surrealistic landscape that deals with her trauma and deals with her grief and sucks us into this interesting world? Like, you know, there have been some bad movies out this year, like Jupiter Ascending, we thought was pretty goofy, but you know what, at least it built a world. Like, I at
Jupiter
least wanted
Ascending
to spend
had
time
flavor
there.
And personality, like, yeah. Jupiter Ascending was like, we're gonna be batshit crazy and make no sense, but we're our own thing. This is not worthy of being discussed in the same sentence.
Saying, like, Jupiter Ascending's not good, but at least there's a world that we enjoyed spending time in. Like, God, the world of Insurgent is such a goddamn downer.
Yeah, and also it just makes no sense. Like, the whole faction thing makes no sense. Like, the way this society works makes no sense. And I get that it's supposed to be, like, a metaphor for when you're a teenager and you're deciding, like, which teen clique am I going to be in? So you've got, like, the hippies, you've got, like, the goth kids, you've got, like, the punk kids. Like, you know, I get that. But, like, just as a way to build an entire society that's made up of also adults, it makes no sense. And the fact that, like, oh, she's so special because she can fit into more than one clique. You're just like, what?
And as you rightly pointed out, the whole concept is supposed to be that where people seem to be dominated by one personality trait, Triss is supposed to experience them all. And yet, personality-wise, she is a total wet blanket.
And not only that, but...
person to talk to at a party.
Yes. Well, all she does is just kind of, like, frown and say things that the capital letters are implied. You know how in dystopian novels, they always have to capitalize random letters?
Yeah. Also, she would, like, make fun of the food you set out for her. Be like, I made a cheese spread. Ugh, is it organic? I eat mud.
Which is a shame, because honestly, Shailene Woodley is an actress that I usually find really likable and charismatic. I've liked her in pretty much everything else I've seen her in. Even in the first Divergent, she actually kind of made me hate it less because I liked her. In this one, though, she's got less to do, she's got less personality, she's very, like, grim and, like you said, a wet blanket. Theo James even is more of a dynamic character than she is, and he's boring as shit too.
Yeah, he looks kind of like a wax figure. Like, he's really handsome and pretty, but he's just got nothing going on. Jake Courtney shows up to be another guy who looks just like those two look enough alike that if it weren't for the face piercings they throw on Jake Courtney, I would not have been able to tell them apart.
One of them is slightly darker, like in hair and skin color. That's but I miss the days when he was like, he had more personality in that one episode of Downton Abbey he was in than he does in like both of these movies combined.
Where he was Pamuk and he was super sleazy. Yeah, so it's like he apparently has charisma. Apparently there's something about the Divergent series that just sucks the will to act out of these people.
Well, and I think just it's like, exactly what you said, is this movie is so committed to being serious that it refuses to have any fun except with Miles Teller, who's a character you're not even supposed to like. However, as you pointed out, there's a way to be serious and still have personality, which would make this a richer experience where I don't actually care. But
another thing that makes the casting of this kind of uncomfortable is that...
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Like, so Shailene Woodley has, within the past 2 years, co-starred with Ansel Elgort, who plays her brother in this.
Miles Teller.
Theo James, and Miles Teller in The Spectacular Now. She has on screen lost her virginity to the three guys she spends all the time with in the movie. And, like, I know it's silly, but it's like there's a scene where her and Theo James are hooking up, and I'm like, I can still vividly remember the other two scenes of you hooking up with the other people who are supposed to play your brother and your enemy in this. And it just made me wish that, like, Hollywood's casting pool had been a little more diverse. So I was just like, why? Like, it's so, like, recent. It's not just like, yeah, because there are actresses who have had love scenes with lots of people. It's like, I vividly remember how they shot these scenes, because every time she does another scene about a character losing their virginity, everybody goes so crazy for it. And, like, she does such a good job. She's so good at fake losing her virginity. And it's like, sure she is, but like, could we have not found two other actors that have not, like, on screen boned her? It made me
it's a movie that I'm like, it's a casting choice that I'm like, I guess maybe at the time it made sense, you just chose the best actor for the job, it's not really anyone's fault, but it does make it really weird in the opening scene, because like in the opening scene you see her with all three of the guys and they're all hanging out together, and I was just like, we've seen you lose your virginity to all three of them, and there's, it's neither here nor there, but it's just kind of weird. I actually remember when they were casting The Fault, or I forget which one they cast first, but I remember fans were actually really upset because Ansel Elgort and Shailene Woodley were brother and sister in one, and you know, lovers in the other. I remember fans were like actually really angry about it, and the filmmakers rightly pointed out, you know, get over it, it's movie casting.
Sure.
But I feel like maybe the fact that this movie doesn't really give us any other reason to care about either of those characters, and the fact that then they throw in two other guys that she's also lost her virginity to on screen, just makes it like, that's...
And also just that, especially with Fault in Our Stars, she basically has the same haircut as that movie, except that it's grown out a little bit, and it's a really bad haircut at this point. Like, it's not cute. I'm all for girls with short hair, clearly, but it's not a good look. It's not one, like... Sorry, my phone is super loud. I don't know if you can hear that. It's not one where, like Katniss affects fashion that even when Katniss is, like, wearing, like, a sweater and angry, dirty pants, she still looks amazingly cool. And, like, Shailene Woodley, that was another thing they failed on Triss. Like, Triss never looks cool.
That fucking weird zip-up leather vest is, like, the dowdiest that she's looked, even though it's supposed to be sexy. But we should move into spoilers, because I do want to talk about the ending of this movie a little bit.
Yes, I want you to start.
Yeah.
So namely, yeah, spoilers.
Spoilers. The ending of this movie makes no sense. This is a movie that thinks that just piling on more information is the same thing as explaining things. So basically, it turns out, you know, the whole movie's about her trying to, like, unlock this box that's gonna have a message from the people that founded this, like, stupid society. And then when she unlocks it, they're like, oh, hey, guess what? There's, like, still a complete world out there. Also, this is all just a test. And you passed because you found a Divergent. And it's just like, what?
Well, also, if the whole point of setting up this town with this big wall around it that's been in existence for 200 years was to put people into factions so that eventually you would figure out that the faction system doesn't work, how does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's this weird thing where they're like, we decide that we're going to divide everyone into these, like, really rigid factions, and the key to moving on is to find the Divergent. So it's like, oh, so you purposely set up a system where people with more than one personality traits would be, like, persecuted.
Ostracized,
and then you decide that then pinning all future hopes for the society on that person, like, simultaneously makes sense. And yeah, also, there's a world out there when you're that apparently set up this entire thing as a test for what purpose? We are never given an answer.
No, and I'm not hopeful for the next movie either.
No, it's like this
world just makes progressively less sense to me, and I'm just like, what? And it's just so infuriating because, like, okay, maybe the books didn't make sense. I'm not going to lie. I didn't read the Divergent books, but I don't care. I don't care about your source material. Once you've decided you're making a movie, you need to make a movie that is going to be the best movie it can be. And to a certain degree, damn the source material. For instance, again, going back to Mockingjay, Effie Trinket is not in Mockingjay except for like a teeny tiny little few pages at the end that really have no relevance on the plot. But people like Effie, so they're like, oh, I know, we'll build Effie into the third movie. And it was a brilliant way to do it. So there's like, you know, you need to run with that. You need to realize that you are an adaptation, not a goddamn book report, and give us something interesting. And I feel like these filmmakers are wildly failing to do that.
I will say, I genuinely don't think that there is a very good movie to be made of this premise. I think that just from the ground up, just from like the conception level, like it just makes no sense as a premise for anything. I do think that they could have made a better movie than the one they delivered, but I don't know. At this point, I'm just like, just fucking go on with it so we can get it over with.
Yeah, can we just be done now? Yeah, like, I mean, this will make enough money that they'll make another one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I gotta say, the best thing for me about Insurgent was just that they had an event where Perry and I got to go and take goofy photos. We'll put these up and you guys can see them.
Yeah, but, you guys talked about it in a past episode.
We did talk about it. I don't think we showed the photos, though. Perry was trying to look like she's catching Leo James, but it looks like he's shooting her in the face. And I was trying to look like I was falling, but it looks more like I'm being abducted. But we got a bunch of them. They all turned out real weird. So we'll post those and you can enjoy those. Because, sure. That's the best thing about Insurgent. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you like the books, then maybe you will be able to not have a problem with this.
Actually heard that it diverges from the source material. I haven't read it, so I don't know in what specific ways, but people have been saying it's less faithful than the last movie was.
Interesting. We thought about having someone on here who had actually read the books, but they also didn't like the movie and were basically just like, it doesn't matter that they're, this is not relevant to the discussion. So we're like, okay, so we took our word for it.
I mean, if you love Divergent and you're like, I can't wait to see where it goes, then obviously watch this movie. Everyone else, just don't bother. Even if you're like, I guess the first one was okay, like, this is not an improvement.
There are just so many things you could be doing with your life instead of this. I would just highly recommend, you know, watching so many movies instead. I would even say, like, Jupiter Ascending is better than this. Fuck, I'd say Project Almanac is better than this, and I did not like Project Almanac at all.
Project Almanac is shorter.
Shorter. Right? It is shorter.
Yeah.
You could watch Project Almanac and, you know, do some sit-ups or play, I don't know, what's this game?
Patty cakes?
Yeah.
All right. I think this review has officially gone off the rails and we can move on now. Now that patty cakes are coming to the mix.
Why is that where I went? All right. We're going to move on to the game section because why not? So last week's game was because of the Ghostbusters news that there's going to be Ghostbusters, which is going to be a girl-fronted movie or a female-fronted movie, and also some other Ghostbusters movie about dudes. We asked you what would be a good name for the dude-centered Ghostbuster movie, and our favorite answer came from our friend Kate Erbland, at Kate Erbland. She wrote, I still think the girl-themed one should be called Ballbusters. Winky emoji. And,
Yeah, technically she did not answer our question, but that one was so, I don't know, that one captured my heart anyway.
It spoke to us.
Yeah.
You don't even really have to answer our question, just tweet at us things we like and we'll read them, because it's our show and we do what we want. So this week's question was based on a weird trip I had to the grocery store where, I made this image, for blue velvet cake. Sure. So what we want to know is, what movie theme product would you like to see on store shelves? So tweet at us at Popcorn Prosecco and let us know. And if you come up with the best answer, we'll put you on next week's show. That's everything. We did it. Next week, Perry will finally be back from South by Southwest and we will celebrate by getting silly. Yeah, you can find us on iTunes and on YouTube and on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco, and we're on Facebook, and come and find us and subscribe and review things and tell your friends. And you can find me on the internet at Christy Puchko, KRISUIPUCHKO, and my career highlights can be found at decadentcriminals.com. Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJ Han, AJHAN, my writing is on slashfilm.com.
And you can find Perry at pnemiroff and at collider.com. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Hey, look, a rainbow. It's pretty.